Thank you, everybody. The March 29, 2012 meeting of the House Special Committee on Energy is called to order. The time is currently 3:12 p.m. For the record, we do have a quorum to my right. We have Representative Peterson, Representative Sadler, Representative Co-Chair Pruitt, Representative Tuck, Representative Lynn, and Representative Olson, as well as myself chairing Representative Foster. Let's see here. I don't see any representatives in the audience here. At this time, I'd like to remind everybody, if you could please turn off your cell phones. And the purpose of today's meeting is to continue hearings on bills previously heard. Under bills previously heard, I'd like to bring up Committee Substitute for House Bill 357, Energy Version I, by Representative Pruitt, which is the AIDA Sustainable Energy Program. So if we could call the sponsor up, and if there's any additional information or comments that can be provided at this time. And again, if you could just provide your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pruitt, District 21. Representative of District 21. Obviously, we've had a little bit of conversation on this in a past meeting. So what I'd like to do is we kind of just highlighted it. It's really more to introduce it last time. I only want to highlight I want to hit on five key things that this does, and then I'm going to hand it over to, if you guys want to ask questions, I'll actually ask my staff, Dirk Kraft, if there's anything else that he wants to add, and then feel free to ask questions, or we do have Mark Davis here from AIDA, who can answer questions for us. House Bill 357 expands the power of AIDA to facilitate the financing of energy projects through the SETS fund by granting the authority and the ability to, and of course SETS, we highlighted that last time, that's a fund that's being created to allow for the loans to take place. The ability to ensure project obligations and guarantee loans or bonds for projects, to defer principal payments and capitalize interest, to offer financing terms up to 30 years for energy projects or 50 years for transmission and hydroelectric projects, enter into lease agreements, sales lease back agreements, build operate transfer agreements, and other agreements to finance energy projects, or offer a reduced interest rate for renewable projects, projects in rural areas, or projects that promote economic development. Those are the five items I just kind of wanted to highlight. I'm sure there's a lot of other questions on it, and feel free to ask myself, and of course the sponsor statement does go into it a little bit deeper. I will ask first if Dirk has anything he wants to add, otherwise we'll open it up for questions.
For the record, Dirk Kraft, staff to Representative Pruitt. Last time I went over a brief sectional analysis of the bill, I wanted to highlight a few things. One, just to make sure everybody knows, this is a companion bill to SB 25 in the Senate. And again, briefly, the basics of this bill. It's empowering and creating a new fund within AIDA to take a portion of Alaska's savings and put it to work in state financing the construction and development of energy projects. This would facilitate financing of energy projects. Then those projects, through the rates, would repay the loans or the investments from AIDA. AIDA would have the ability to also reach out to capital markets to backfill the fund by using the loans as an asset. Setting up an investment vehicle that can perpetuate itself and grow. So 20, 30 years from now, the funding exists to build the infrastructure, to replace the infrastructure that was built through this fund. Again, these principal and interest payments will be kept in-state as opposed to these people getting these loans going out-of-state and getting these loans from somewhere else. Earlier this year, we heard testimony in the committee on the current SEIRP and the energy needs of Southeast. We know that energy, the SEIRP and the rail belt, there's going to be a lot of needs, capital needs in the future. Estimates are way into the billions and for the next 5 to 10 years. And through this bill, we're hoping to fill that financing gap that we see between what the utilities can bond for, what kind of capital they have, and what they're going to need. And I also wanted to highlight a section in 14 to address some concerns we heard about limitations on financing. That's page 10, line 22. This is just to make sure that if there is a loan over $20 million, they will have to come back to the legislature for approval. And with that, I'll be happy to take any questions the committee has.
Okay, are there any committee questions or comments? Oh, Representative Tuck.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So currently, I guess I would save that one for Ada when they come through. Will these loans be able to be transferred once a utility gets a loan and let's say or whatever interest gets a loan, will they be able to be transferred?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck. I'm not sure. We might have to ask Mark Davis when he comes up on how that'll work.
Okay, and then again, Mr. Chair.
A follow-up.
And is this intended for any type of energy projects, or is it specific to utilities, privately, public, co-opt, or is there any limitations on that?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, it's my understanding that this is going to be used for any transmission, energy projects, and anything that falls under that umbrella.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chair, just for Representative Tuck there, on page 11, starting at line 3, energy project is defined, and there are several different opportunities there that it can be utilized for. And I hope that helps answer the question that you have.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Tuck, we are going to be coming to the committee with a CS with some changes Tuesday. So some of this will get changed, and we'll be sure to distribute a copy to everyone's office prior so we can go over the changes and then bring it to the committee and discuss everything.
Thank you. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And since these are going to be loans, I was wondering, is there any place in here that sets the interest rate on these loans?
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, Section 8 through 12 sets the interest rates for ADA, and we're going through in those sections and defining the different sources of revenue that they have to finance projects. And we went through all those sections and made it clear that the interest rate applies to the fund being created in Section 14.
Okay, and follow-up, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, follow-up.
Thank you. And is this meant to be a self-sustaining fund so that when loans are paid back, more principal becomes available to make additional loans?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, that's absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Okay, further questions? Representative Tuck?
I have one, but hopefully it wasn't just asked. I forgot what the last question was. Sorry about that. But when the loans are paid back, will it go back into the same fund to be relent again? Was that the question you asked?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that. I kind of thought so. It probably triggered the question in my head, subconsciously listening to that. So I'm sorry, you might repeat the answer.
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, that's correct.
Okay. Are there further questions? And let's see, Ada, we do have Ada here, Mark Davis, and I don't know if there are other folks here, but if the committee has questions for Ada, maybe if we could call them up. If you could just state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Davis. I'm the Deputy Director of ADA. Essentially, what this bill does is create an energy infrastructure bank within ADA. It would do more than make loans. It could make loans, and that's a departure from ADA's current practice because ADA does not make direct loans right now. It only operates in the secondary market. ADA operates in something called the Enterprise Development Fund, and that fund is used to for our loan participation with banks and for our development projects. This bill creates a brand new fund separate from that Enterprise Development Fund just for energy, and it lets that fund, that separate fund, make loans, raise money through bonds, issue loan guarantees and bond guarantees. It also has special powers. Those special powers include the ability to defer interest payments, capitalized interest, and other methodologies to allow a project to cash flow over time, a lot like we did with the Duane Mountain Transportation System. So that those bonds were issued for the Red Dog Mine project, and at first the project didn't generate enough revenue to pay the bonds, so ADA covered the bonds, and over time it generated enough money so that now ADA can cover the bonds for the revenues from the tolls on the road. So these large projects usually need time to develop. We call it patient capital, and there's a series of powers in this bill that let ADA have those patient capital powers. So essentially, what this would do is take this money from the savings account of the state, transfer to ADA. ADA would use it for these energy projects. It would use a variety of tools, loans, bonds, guarantees, to finance these, largely in concert with the private sector, because the bill restricts the lending to a third of the project. So we'd have to find a partner. And that's consistent with ADA's current policies, where it's been trying always to find a partner to make sure there's someone who wants to invest in the project to make sure it can cash flow and hopefully lower the rates. For example, this would let a private utility, which is a good question whether it has for some tech, whether it can be private or public, it can be both, but they could issue a bond. Now, if they were issued a bond, it could be a private activity bond, and you'll also be subject to the rate that that particular utility could garner in the market. If you were to issue an ADA bond, ADA guarantee, and certified as a public project, then it could be a tax-exempt bond issued as a AA plus bond by ADA. That would be the exact same vehicle. You'd have the exact same project, but you would have substantially lowered the financial debt service on the project. So this is a methodology for financing rather than a methodology for development. ADA would still work with the Alaska Energy Authority to look at projects that make sense, as we do now. And there is a coordination between ADA and the Alaska Energy Authority. For example, I'm in charge, at least temporarily, of the Power Project Fund for AEA because they wanted some more underwriting standards in that project. So I've been doing that to help them get some projects going in rural Alaska, but making sure that the project can pay back. So I would assume that with this bill, we continue that close relationship between the Alaska Energy Authority and ADA, and of course they share the same board. So in that sense, we're not trying to step in the energy business, but we are trying to find out ways to lower the cost, because any cost borne by a utility or by an energy project usually get paid by the ratepayers. And so the goal here is to lower the ratepayers, what they eventually pay for power. And that, if I'd be happy to answer any more specific questions.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of the committee? No questions.
All right, well, thank good. You.
Okay, well, at this time, I'd like to open up HB 357 for public comments. And so I think maybe we'll start with the folks here in the audience first. Looks like, Mark Davis, doesn't look like you're testifying. You're just here for questions, correct? Okay, we have Don Kubley. Don, if you could state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Don Kubley. Today, my professional hat is for the Alaska Independent Power Producers Association, and I'm also proudly wearing another private hat, which is as a member of a sixth-generation Ketchikan family. I think this is a great piece of legislation. I commend Representative Pruitt and Dirk for the hard work that they put into to crafting it and getting it ready for today, and for the committee's work in presenting it and making it available for testimony. The Alaska Independent Power Producers Association is a newly formed energy advocacy organization dedicated to encouraging private investment and capital in assisting Alaska to achieve its renewable energy resource goals, as well as provide an opportunity for competitive priced power for all Alaskan citizens. The APA Association is a membership organization comprised of Alaska's leading independent power producers and developers. Our members' locations span Alaska and are invested or interested in geothermal, wind, biomass, hydrokinetic, hydropower developments across the state. APA is comprised of private power developers and producers from all regions of our state. Our members include CIRI, Delta Wind Farm, Alaska Power and Telephone, Kutznuwu, and Juno Hydropower, as well as Polar Consultants. AIPA and its members dream of a future where the currently stranded renewable energy resources, the vast stranded energy resources of the state, are made available throughout Alaska with surplus renewable energy serving the rest of our nation. It's not very often that an organization gets a chance to participate in the challenge of removing the technical and logistical economic barriers, and it has the process to create a new industry that will bring badly needed jobs, especially to my region of the state, but across the state, and a tax base and economic well-being to the residents of Alaska. AIPA is working hard to become the voice of the private power investments before regulatory and decision-making agencies so that Alaska can benefit from an open and encouraging energy business climate that encourages private investment into Alaska energy infrastructure. Please contact our board of directors if you have need any more backup on the organization. But I would like to make just one comment. Back when the Southeast Power Grid was first conceived and built, my father and I represented Ketchikan and the Gateway Borough, and we were also consultants to the Four Dam Pool. From the very get-go, when they first built Swan Lake, Tyee, and the Kodiak, there was four dams, actually, and one in Kodiak, the plan all along was to have a grid that goes all the way from Metlakatla to Skagway. Because, as Senator Murkowski put it so well, we're the Saudi Arabia of hydropower. It's clean energy. I mean, you know, we're exporting oil. What is it? It's energy. We want to export gas. It's energy. Electricity is pure energy, pure clean energy. And as also Senator Murkowski put it, who could very well be the chair of the next energy committee in the Senate, we are the green pipeline of energy, not just for our communities, but with just a 30-mile extension to the BC grid, we have a customer base of 300 million people. Now, probably not a kilowatt of that would make it out of BC, because there's seven large mines right on the other side of the mountains that have been asking for this resource for years, and would probably use everything we could spare. The important thing is lighting up our villages and our communities. You know, this picture up here of the metal being laid up with all the mines we've got going right now in Southeastern and potentially in the future, instead of just shipping off the minerals to somewhere else to be processed, we could process ingots right here. That would create hundreds and hundreds of jobs, but it's going to take cheap electricity and cheap power to do it. And as Congressman Young said, is it cheap to finish this grid? No, but it would be a sin not to. And it's going to be worth it when we do. And I think this is a great piece of legislation, and I strongly support it, and I hope the committee does too.
Real good. Thank you. Are there any questions for Don, the committee? Seeing none, thank you. Next up, we have Jody Mitchell. Jody? And if you could just state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Foster. I'm Jody Mitchell. I am the CEO of Inside Passage Electric Cooperative. We are a nonprofit, member-owned utility that serves the small communities of Angoon, Hoona, Cake, Klukwan, and the Upper Chilkat Valley. We have about 1,300 members, and we are almost entirely dependent on diesel. I'm speaking in favor of the Bill 357, and I want to thank Representative Pruitt for bringing this to us. I think this is just the kind of vehicle that we need in state, and I have a couple of comments about the bill. You know, in rural Alaska, a lot of grant funding is necessary in order to do what everybody expects you to do, which is to reduce rates to consumers. If you have to borrow all the money, then you could end up with a hydro project that ends up with higher rates than what you had before. And personally, I think that would be about suicide for me and my job. So we pursue grant funding as much as we can. The best source we have is the Renewable Energy Fund here in state now. But we do anticipate that we will need a loan program for gap funding if we don't have enough money through the grant programs that we've been accessing. Right now, we have existing loans through the federal government, through the Rural Utility Service. We have about $5.3 million outstanding at this point. I would much rather be borrowing money from the state of Alaska than I would to be sending our interest payments to Washington. So I am really happy that this might become law. I would even be happier if we were able to refinance our existing loans with the state. And I'm not sure, I didn't see anything in here that says that we would be able to do that. But I would definitely be willing to do that if that were an option. I just want to thank you all for your good work and looking out for our rural communities, and I think this is a good way to do it. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions of the committee for Jody? Seeing none, I think that's a good question, and I'll bring that up here a little later. But at this point, I think we'll move on to the next person, and we have Duff Mitchell here. And Duff, if you could just state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Duff Mitchell. I'm testifying today as Vice President, Business Manager of Juno Hydropower. I'm also a member of the Alaska Independent Power Producers Association, which supports Senate Bill 25 and House Bill 357. I must say, is a great vehicle to move this forward. When I say forward, we have a great energy policy, and we have some really good goals, and this is an executable step in accomplishing those policies and goals. And so for that reason, we tremendously support this bill and this vehicle. House Bill 357, I believe, is good, responsible legislation. Infrastructure investments pay dividends in three ways. This bill will allow ADA to receive money back from loans made. And when you do good loans, and the way this is set up, it will only have good loans, so it's not free money that goes off into a neverland, but it's based on economic feasibility, it pays a dividend back. The second dividend is that economically feasible energy infrastructure not only pays and stabilizes rates today, but in the sense of a hydropower project, it gives you stable rates and what I will call a super feasible rates 50 years from now. Because a lot of these renewable energy investments, once the investment is made up front, the costs do not increase. Unlike the price volatility of fossil fuels and coal and other things, you're dependent on the price. But once you've invested in the infrastructure, as long as you maintain it, and most of the money goes up front, it has great rates. Hydropower projects built 50 years ago today are somewhere under a nickel. And so just think ahead 50 years. This is going to allow us to really keep the rates and help stabilize rates not only today but in the future. The third dividend is it creates jobs right here in our state. And I think that's extremely important when people are looking for family wage jobs. Renewable energy produces good wages. Linemen make good wages. The construction workers, the people that are, and I'll also add the environmental scientists. In our project, we hire quite a few people in the environmental realm just to get through the permitting. In addition, if you syndicate a loan and you have somebody from the state like ADA doing a portion of the loan, you actually parlay and you actually are able to get outside investors to come in and invest in our state. So now we're using ADA for maybe 25% or a certain part of a larger project, but we got Credit Suisse or we got, you know, a Nash Wells Fargo or someone else bringing in the rest of their money. So in a way, it's opening the state up for business in the renewable energy realm. So for those reasons, I think this is great legislation. I would only make one recommendation, and I've said the same thing in the Senate, so I will be consistent. $250 million for the level of projects that we have in the state is really not that much. My particular project is over $100 million. Now, we wouldn't ask for ADA and avail ourselves to the full amount. We would try to do some syndication. But what I'm saying is that, you know, I would think that a more reasonable amount forward is $500 million. So if anyone was going to ask me a recommendation, that would be the only improvement that I would suggest. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Real good. Thank you. And are there any questions from the committee? Seeing none, we thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Going to the off-net, well, first of all, is there anybody else here in the audience who would like to testify? Seeing none, we'll go to the off-net here. And Joe Griffith, are you online?
Was that for Joe Griffith, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, it was. Joe, if you could please state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Foster and Pruitt. My name is Joe Griffith. I'm the general manager of Matanuska Electric Association, serving 57,000 members from Eagle River to Petersville, and maintaining about 4,000 miles of line. I'm also the CEO of the Alaska Rail Belt Cooperative Transmission and Electric Company, better known as ARCTEC. ARCTEC is a generation and transmission cooperative that provides interregional energy solutions through cooperative actions to five of the six rail belt utilities, and usually the sixth is right in there with us, though they're not a member of ARCTEC. Staff, Jody and Duff have hit the major reasons for this concept. I'll add a couple more. All of you know that energy costs are up. The costs of electrical infrastructure are staggering. The need for it is crucial and critical today in the rail belt as well as southeast and across the entire state. In the next 10 years in the rail belt alone, we could see upwards of maybe $6 billion being required, and that doesn't even touch what is required within the various distribution utilities that provide the service directly to the consumers. Already, our consumers are financially stressed. Vehicle fuel alone is doing that heavily for the folks in the valley. This chills our whole economy and drives business out of Alaska and makes life more difficult for all of us. HB 357 is a valuable tool in helping to reduce the impacts of the costs of capital improvements. It provides a reasonable method of financing for the infrastructures that we need, and it keeps money in the state and creates jobs. We support all of that. Every penny of support provided flows directly to our consumers and will reduce their costs. I thank you for taking this step toward reducing costs and providing favorable loan terms for our utilities in the state so that we can afford the required energy infrastructure. If I were king for a day, I would side with Duff, and I'd make it bigger. I think $250 million is too small. Senator McGuire had originally a couple of billion in there. I thought that was a good number, but that's probably pretty hard to choke down these days. So I think I would go with Duff and say, if you get a chance to raise it, it ought to go to $500 million. And I also think that $20 million requirement to come back to the legislature is too low. $50 million would probably be a better number. Otherwise, you delay potentially crucial projects for upwards of a year while you're trying to get legislative approval for the loan. So I'd do those two things. Again, happy to answer any questions, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
And thank you, Joe. Are there any questions of the committee? Okay, seeing none, we do have a Bob Breen and Rosie Ricketts from HFC. I'm not sure if you're just available for questions, or were you wanting to testify, and are you online?
This is Alaska Housing. This is Kerry Bowling with Alaska Housing. Is that, I'm sorry, could you repeat the questions?
Oh, I wasn't sure if you were just available for questions, or did you want to testify?
We were just available for questions. We have no additional comments at this time.
Okay, real good. Is there anybody else in the audience or on the off-nets that we may have missed who wanted to testify on HB 357? Okay, seeing none. At this time, we're going to go ahead and close public testimony on HB 357. Let's see here. Maybe going back, I just do have a few questions. And, Jerk, maybe if you could approach it. Just going back to Jody Mitchell's question about whether or not there's the possibility of doing a refi. Can you address that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's something we'll have to discuss with the sponsor of the companion bill and look into that a little bit more.
Okay. And then,
Mr. Chairman?
Oh, go ahead, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought I saw a clause in here that allows repurchase and lease back, which might actually take care of the situation which you were referring to. It's not exactly refinancing, but it might be a way for Ada to lower the interest rates on the project that she currently has financed.
Okay. And maybe we'll be holding this bill over, and so that's something that we can certainly look into a little more. And so I appreciate that, Representative Peterson. And then the other quick question I had was regarding the $250 million. And as was mentioned, Senator Liesl McGuire had proposed several billion. I don't know, and maybe you can't answer this, but do you have any insight as to how the number came to be at $250 million?
Mr. Chair, they started out and through discussions with their own members, they thought this would be an easier number to get through because right now there is an urgency that we're at an unprecedented interest rates right now, and the urgency to get this through, we thought that was a number that we could get through this session. Mm-hmm. And right now is the ideal time to get something like this in place.
Great. Are there further questions of the committee? Seeing none, at this point, we're going to go and hold the bill over for further consideration. So thank you very much, Dirk. And if we have any other questions, we'll bring it up most likely at next Tuesday's meeting. So with that, look at this here.
I didn't hear any bell phone ring.
Which would work for her or not.
But that's how you pass it.
Right. We'll take a quick at ease here. Back in here, and our next bill today will be Committee Substitute for House Bill 323, Energy Version I, by Representative Tammy Wilson, and it is the Non-Attainment Area Home Heating System Grants. We did hear this bill earlier. Does the sponsor have any additional comments or questions, concerns, suggestions? Please feel free to. And if you could just identify yourself.
For the record, my name is Tammy Wilson, Representative, District 11, North Pole. I just wanted to clarify a few things that Alaska Housing said last week. Our bill is for owner-occupied housing units only, which there's 21,410 by the U.S. Census. And so that would change. The original numbers they gave would be about half of that. But just so people know that 501 wood stoves have already been replaced in our borough. Also, 2,256 homes have participated in the energy rebate program, which would disqualify them for this program, with 324 homes in our area still pending. 940 have participated in the Alaska Housing Weatherization Program, would then disqualify them for this. And we even did our own little survey. We sent out quite a few letters to our constituents letting them know about all these programs that there are to see how many couldn't afford or who had old oil furnaces, and about 40% said they did. So I think that, you know, the million-dollar cap that we put on would be more than sufficient to find out how this program does, and it would just be a test model as these other programs continue to make their way to people's homes and their understanding. So with that, I appreciate it, and I hope you enjoy your treats.
Okay. Are there any comments or questions of the committee? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The options for taking advantage of this is either $7,500 for a furnace or $5,000 for a wood stove. And and this is separate and aside from the energy rebate program. And I know that the energy rebate program, if you take part in this, that you are no longer qualify for an energy rebate. It would be nice if we were able to, you know, someone gets $5,000 for a wood stove, still allow them to apply for not more than $5,000 for the energy rebate program so they can You know, because one of the biggest focuses on this is getting attainment. And that's why I really appreciate that. A couple things it does. It gets attainment so that Fairbanks is no longer out of compliance with EPA. And then it also allows people to have more energy efficient homes. And I don't want to cripple people from having the full effect of energy efficient home by limiting it into the, because really, because this is a dual purpose, you would hope that people would take advantage of this first, but I want to see people not take advantage of this when they can get bigger value from the energy rebate program because it's this or that. So I don't know if there's some way that we can make it this and that and not to exceed over 10,000. And if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, if I can hear comments from the sponsor.
Sure.
Through the chair, Representative Tuck. Most people who do take advantage of the rebate program, they spend in excess of the $10,000 to even get the $10,000, and it's about $10,000 down to $6,500. So this is pretty close to that. And we have spoken with HFC, and what I think I would be much more comfortable is let this go through this direction for the next year and see what kind of response we get, and hopefully also working with the raters, being able to speak to people about possibly other energy efficiencies that they can do on their own and just see how the program works here before we open it up too much further. But I do appreciate that, and we are looking into that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further questions? Okay. Seeing no questions at this time, I think at this time I'd like to entertain a motion that the committee substitute for House Bill 323 Energy number 27-LS1275-I and the accompanying fiscal note be moved from the committee.
I can make that motion. I move that the committee substitute for House Bill 232-I and the accompanying fiscal note be moved out of committee with individual recommendations.
Okay. It's been moved that
Chair, I like to object because I take it first bite and I remove my objection.
Okay. The objection has been lifted. So it's been moved that CS for House Bill 323 Energy and the accompanying fiscal note be moved from committee with individual recommendations. Is there an objection? And I believe the objection was lifted. So no further objections. I assume hearing no objection, committee substitute for House Bill 323 Energy has been moved from committee with the accompanying fiscal note. So thank you very much, Representative Wilson.
Thank you. Thank you for proving you should always listen to your mother.
Okay. At this time, we're going to take a quick at ease here. Let's see here. We're back in. And our next bill today will be committee substitutes. Let's see, actually here. Committee substitute for House Bill 336, Energy, by Representative Thompson, the Energy Assistance Program and Vouchers. And what we're going to do here is we'll hear from the sponsor and then take up committee questions and then any amendments that any folks might have is here. So we did hear this bill earlier, and I just would like to give the opportunity for the bill sponsor to make any comments or suggestions. If there are any, if you could just please identify yourself for the record. Thank you.
Yes, I'm Representative Steve Thompson from House District 10 in Fairbanks. House Bill 336, you heard last week, and we had a lot of public testimony on it. We did have some questions that have been addressed somewhat in the CS that you have before you. And we think it's a friendly amendment. It explains a little bit more of how we and puts wood and coal and other heating products into the bill, which were not included in there before. It was just a $250 credit if you didn't use any of the electricity or fuel oil or things. So I'm here to answer any questions if you have any.
Okay. And are there any questions of the committee? Seeing none. Let's see, I did want to mention, as we move forward here, we'll take up the amendment here in a moment, and we do have my staff here to address that. But one of the issues that I think we're going to be looking at here is just how the other body deals with the issue of PCE and how that's handled and determining the dollar value of the voucher, and so that's going to be one issue. But the issue that I had in terms of just wanting to make sure that we included coal or other things such as biomass, I think, you know, as we're talking about, is going to be addressed here in this amendment. And so I guess with that, no, I'm not sure if we're going to take it real quick at ease here. I think if I introduce the amendment, then we need to just make some procedural changes here. So, at ease. And at this time, we do have two amendments. Representative Olson.
Are we starting on number two? Or?
Number one and number two, yeah.
I would like to move amendment number one.
Okay, and I will object for the purpose of discussion, and we do have my staff, Paul Bull, here. If you could just, for the record, state your name and proceed with a description, explanation of amendment number one.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee. Paul Bull, staff to Representative Foster. Amendment one is mostly a housekeeping amendment to comply with what is in the version of the other body. If the members will turn to page 3, line 14. Currently, the distribution method lists that an address listed on the heating oil, natural gas, electricity, or account voucher will credit. The issue with this right here is that out in many rural villages, they don't use addresses. There aren't street names and, you know, basically, to be colloquial about it, John Joe lives over there. So it doesn't work. So Mira Kohler from AVEC had come up with the language to insert after the word address or other identifying information requested by the corporation, referring to the electric utility in the majority of the cases in this point. And then the rest of it reads as the remainder of the subsection lists.
Okay, real good. Are there any questions? Paul, Representative Tuck.
Okay, just to make sure I understand, through the chair, requested by the corporation, but we're talking about the utility in this case?
In probably 90% of the eventualities, perhaps 100%, it would be an electric utility. But since we have three other identified types of distribution laid out here, we want to cover all our bases.
Okay. So, if I may, would it be appropriate to say by the corporation and or utility? Because not all utilities are, I mean, there might be co-ops, but I don't know if they would. Just want to make sure they were covering all the grounds. Does corporation, I guess my question would be, does corporation cover all the grounds?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, I have to admit that I am not sure. Co-ops would still be corporations.
Yeah, public utilities.
So, public utilities are definitely corporations.
And then it probably covers
the whole thing.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that we're clear.
Yeah, the co-op would be the only instance, and that they would definitely have to be incorporated.
Okay. Are there further questions on amendment number one?
Oh, and if I may, to further solidify our positive on this, in order to qualify, you have to meet the requirements listed in section 1, I believe it's subsection B, of being a qualified vendor. So that qualified vendor would have to be a corporation.
Okay, real good. further questions on amendment number one? Okay. At this time, because we are missing a sizable portion of our committee here out on another meeting here, I'd like to maintain my objection just so that we can bring this back for their attention. And so, Representative Olson, I believe there's an amendment number two.
Yeah, I'd like to move amendment number two.
Okay, and I'll object for the purpose of discussion. And Paul, if you could address amendment number two.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. To start with, I would refer the members to page four. And this is dealing with the cash disbursement section of the bill. The intent with this amendment was to address those who heat with a fuel other than those listed in B of this section, which is natural gas, diesel, or electricity. The cash disbursement in line 10, subsection 2, deals with rent and also covers it for other energy costs other than that which are provided earlier in the bill. However, the $250 limit is not really equitable with what is listed for the main identified fuel sources. So what we were trying to do is stick with the spirit of the bill from the sponsor and go for 2 months heating, which our research has shown two cords of wood, depending on where you are in the state and how big your house is about 2 months worth of heat, which would be about the same as 250 gallons or 35,000 cubic feet. So what we did was went in and on page 4, line 10, after the word rent, we deleted energy or heating costs. And so that section would now read, upon certification that the $250 will be used towards rent at the recipient's primary residence in the state for a check for $250 in the name of the recipient of the energy voucher. So what that does is it still provides for people who rent and have their utilities rolled up in the rent, but whose landlord does not want to go through the transfer options in subsection 1 of the bill. This still provides them to get compensation that can be applied towards their rent. And the next part of that is within line 12, page 4 as well, after the word voucher, we insert the word or, and then we add a new subsection on line 13, subsection 3, which reads, notwithstanding a direct payment for electricity in section G, or in notwithstanding direct payment for electricity in G of this section, for a recipient whose primary residence heats exclusively with a fuel not listed in B of this section, upon certification, the $500 will be used towards heating costs at the recipient's primary residence in the state for a check of $500 in the name of the recipient of the energy voucher. So conceptually, to break it down, it could work in multiple scenarios, but if you live in a cabin that heats with wood but you have an electric utility, you would still be able to qualify for the larger cash disbursement that is to be used exclusively for home heating.
Okay. Are there any questions of the committee? Looks like Representative Tucky might be on the verge of...
Yeah, it's brewing.
Okay.
No, but not yet.
Okay.
Well, then I'll
Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Paul, I was... So we're reading in page 4, line 10 there, number 2. We're leaving that number at $250, but we're upping this to $500. And could you explain the reason why we're upping this to $500 and leaving that at $250?
Representative Peterson, through the chair. The concept behind that is when it's rolled in with the rent, you're generally dealing with a smaller domicile, and also we're trying to avoid the preference for taking the cash payment over a utility payment. The impetus of the bill is for an energy rebate, and what is trying to be avoided is a cash handout similar to that what was done under the Palin administration, and so we wanted to lower that amount to disincentivize taking that cash payment.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Okay, Representative Tuck.
Just a quick comment, and unfortunately I don't have the supporting document in front of me because I don't remember what it was, but I think it said something like in one of the supporting documents that the average statewide of electric is 15.1 cents per kilowatt hour, I believe. And multiplying that out, it comes just under $250. So I appreciate what you're trying to do. You're trying to keep people from taking the $250 cash. You want to make sure it goes towards utilities. But that being the average, that means there's a lot of locations that probably have a lot less kilowatt hour and the cash payment still. And I think we still somewhere in here have that language that take, you can either get the, when a tenant is, can either take the $250 check or get the amount to pass on to their landlord, and they have to not reapply, but they have to do some documents to make that happen. So I don't know if we want to look elsewhere to make that same provision. I'm not sure, but I just wanted to point that out right now while we're talking about this particular amendment.
Representative Tuck, through the chair, the section for the voucher transfer that you're referring to is in section 1, or subsection 1 on page 4 of the bill, line 7, and that one remains unadulterated. So those provisions still work the same as they did previously.
Can you repeat where that was again? I'm sorry.
Oh, page 4, line 7.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay, real good. Are there further questions of the committee on amendment number 2? I mean, further questions. Seeing none.
Mr. Chairman, if you would like, I would be happy to go over that again for the members who just recently joined us.
Absolutely. I was just going to ask if you could do a quick summary on amendment number 2, and then we could maybe go back to amendment number 1, and we might be able to clear those out then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So to recap, the short and easy of what amendment number 2 does is, in addition to the already provided for $250 amount for rentals, we have carved out of that section the home heat and put in a new section that provides for $500 if it's to be used for home heat rather than rent, and that put on a sideboard within that that you can only qualify for that higher amount if you live in a primary residence that heats exclusively with a fuel type not listed in B of this section.
And if I could just add to that, Chairman Foster here, the impetus or the origin behind the amendment was my concern that we include other fuel sources such as biomass and wood. I received some feedback from folks who said that they heat with wood, and from some of the dealers who said that they sell wood, especially in the Copper River Basin area there, and no real easy way to administer something like that, and so just kind of in talking to the various stakeholders here, thought that maybe doing the dollar amount, but the original bill had a $250 dollar value, and we thought maybe if we could make that a little more, and there's some other technical issues in terms of just trying not to turn this into a situation where people were more inclined to take the money, and so we didn't want to get too high with the dollar value, and I don't know, Paul, can you add to that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we also discussed the issue with Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and I believe they may be online at the time. Their preference was towards cash versus drawing a separate section out specifically for wood for a number of reasons, one of them being challenges with the qualified distributors. There does exist within the LIHEAP program a qualified distributor list. but what the flexibility of that and what the regional distribution of that is seemed like it might be problematic. And the other side of that being that if we're writing up a section to include wood, there are still a number of other heating sources, propane, district heat, pellet stoves, that would still be left out in the cold, no pun intended. And to on a separate section to refer back to Representative Tuck's question talking about utilities, and one of the reasons for carving out this new provision is so that they have the option of choosing between heat and electricity. Under the current statute of the bill, you could opt to take the voucher for your utility bill, but you would have no way of providing for heat. And anybody in Alaska knows that you can live in a warm cabin with no lights, but you can't live in a cold cabin with lights.
Well put.
Okay. Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just kind of wanted to get it on the record, and you did mention this a second ago, Paul, that even though it's not listed, propane, diesel fuel, and any other form of heating your home that we have not mentioned, but someone may be ingenious enough to be using out there, would be covered by this new amendment. Is that correct?
Representative Peterson, through the chair, that is correct.
And as Paul mentioned, we do have AHFC online here. I believe it's Bob Breen and Rosie Ricketts. I believe you're just available for questions and not testimony. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Are there any questions for AHFC here? Okay. No questions. Well, with that, I will remove my objection to amendment number two. Are there any further objections? Seeing no objections, amendment number two is adopted. And then backing up into amendment number one here, I'll remove my objection. I'll maintain that objection. And Paul, if you could just give a quick summary.
Representative Foster, if the members will return to page 3, line 14. And once again, what you have essentially is a housekeeping measure in order to get this section of the bill to conform with language that's in the other body. During discussions in that committee, it was pointed out that the language for distribution cited using an address, and not all parts of Alaska use addresses, specifically small rural communities. All billing and mail delivery is done through the post office, and there aren't street names and not house numbers. So per the suggested language of Miracolor of AVEC, we inserted on page 3, line 14, after the word address, or other identifying information requested by the corporation. Corporation referring to any qualified vendor within this section of the bill.
Okay, are there any questions for Paul? Seeing no questions, I will remove my objection. Are there any further objections? Hearing no objection, amendment number one is adopted. And at this time, does the committee have any questions going back again to HFC or the bill sponsor, Representative Tuck?
Not any specific questions, but I have a conceptual amendment that I'd like to introduce.
Okay.
Okay, so I move conceptual amendment number 3, and if I may state it.
Okay.
On page 4, no, I'm sorry. It just popped in my head as I was looking at this. Page 4, line 8. If we look at line 8 and 9, when a tenant has a voucher, they can take that value of that voucher and get it in the name of their landlord for the cost of the utility or for $250. One thing I don't want to see is I don't want to see landlords, and I'm a landlord myself, being to line their pockets with anything that's less than the value of that. And here in this, it says the value of which may, subject negotiations between a landlord and tenant, be deducted from rent. I don't think that there should be any negotiations on that. I think that the full value should be given for their rent, whether it's paid to electricity or whatever, or they take the $250. I think it should be at the full value. And I don't know if the sponsor wants to speak on that, but I had that in my mind earlier, and I finally found the language that we have here, but I don't think it should be subject to negotiations between the landlord and tenant. I think it should be subject to agreement, but the agreement is at full value every time.
Okay. Representative Pruitt?
Just want to clarify what you're trying to make sure that no one's, that there's not a discussion between the landlord and tenant that says, I'll take that voucher at, you know, 50 cents on the dollar is kind of what you're getting at, right? Is that?
That's correct, because a tenant is in a disadvantaged position to be able to get the full value, because how else are they going to use it?
Right.
You know, because here's what the landlord can offer. Because the tenant can take the $250 check, oh, I'll give you $350. When he's getting the value for 1,500 kilowatts of power, which may be at $600. So that's what I'm trying to prevent, is that the full value is not going as intended.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Does that make sense?
And you have language?
Well, what I was going to do, I do have language, is on page 4, line 8, add the word full after the and before value, so it reads the full value of which may. And then on line 9, take out subject to negotiations between the landlord and the tenant. So it would read, starting on line 7, if applicable, for replacement voucher in the name of the landlord or owner of the residence in the state in which the recipient resides, the full value may be deducted from rent.
Okay, maybe. So you've moved to the amendment number 3?
Yes, I moved that as amendment, conceptual amendment number 3.
And just so that we can have the discussion, I'll object for the purpose of discussion. Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And now I'm sort of thinking out loud here. The voucher does not necessarily have to be worth $250, because if the landlord is heating with electricity or some other form of energy, the voucher could be, you know, the 1,500 kilowatt hours. And what was the amount of natural gas that we had here?
Representative Peterson, through the chair, 35,000 cubic feet.
35,000 cubic feet. And in many areas of the state, that would be significantly more than $250. And so I just wanted to get that on the record, that these vouchers that would be in equal value to what the cost of the energy that the landlord is providing to that tenant.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You would hope so. But it says here, subject negotiations between the landlord and tenant.
Right.
Yeah, so the landlord can negotiate something less to pay their tenant than as far as applying to their rent and what the actual costs were. And the costs are to benefit the tenant, not to benefit the landlord.
Right. And to follow up on that, since the landlord is the one that's being billed by the utility, the tenant may not know what that number, what the value would actually be. He's not the one that's receiving the bill, so it would be difficult. He'd be in a difficult position to know what number he should be credited for, if you understand where I'm coming from. Because especially if you live in a multi-unit building and you have one heater that heats all the units, it would be pretty difficult to ascertain what the amount per unit was, because one unit may be bigger than another, may have more people than another, may keep their thermostat warmer than another. I'm just throwing out issues that we probably need to at least discuss, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Paul, go ahead.
I think another scenario with which Representative Peterson is alluding to would be a mother-in-law apartment, where you have a house with a small apartment on the side, but they share a meter and they share a boiler. So there isn't a clear delineation of what the value of that voucher may be. That said, we are still waiting for language dealing with power cost equalization and how that's rated and whether or not we would deal with that regulatorily or with the bill. So we expect to do some more work on this, and I would be happy to work with Representative Tuck on language.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe the language is already there. It's price times 1,500 kilowatts of power. We know what the price is. You don't have to know how much they used. All you have to know is what the price is. So I don't see the problem with this. I think it's spelled out very well to keep that from happening. I don't think there's going to be a problem with delineating the price and how much you get for that voucher.
Representative Foster, I see Representative Stuck's point is that the amount is spelled out in earlier sections of the bill. So it's, be it electricity, diesel, or natural gas, it is simply that amount multiplied by the going rate, and that would be applied to rent.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But, for example, if you have a fourplex and you have one natural gas meter, how do you come up with, you know, what the cost is per unit? You know, I'm not trying to make it difficult. I'm just bringing out questions that are probably going to have to be answered at some point for this legislation to be effective.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Paul.
If you have a fourplex that is sharing one heater, you would have, let's, for the sake of simplicity's sake, say there is a single tenant in each one of those four units. And furthermore, for simplicity's sake, let's say that they're using diesel. So each one of those units would be, and each one of the tenants in that unit would be credited for whatever the going rate of diesel was multiplied by 250 gallons. And so that amount, pulling a number out of the air, let's say $1,000, would then be credited to each tenant. And the point of Representative Tuck is that it's irrelevant how it's delineated, because the language isn't written per usage, it's written per amount. So that amount is already written into law.
Okay. All right.
Further questions of the committee on amendment number 3? If not, I don't know if the bill sponsor would like to address amendment number 3, or if you're okay with it. Then.
I'm okay with it.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. Okay. With that said, I will lift my objection on amendment number 3. And are there further objections to amendment number 3? Seeing no objections, amendment number 3 is adopted. I guess with that, are there any further questions or comments on the bill? Okay. I think my intent would be to move this out next Tuesday. We're going to need a CS to kind of pull all this together and clean it up and make sure that we all understand it. And then we do have the issue of the companion bill and what's happening on the other side there, and some questions in terms of PCE. And so, Representative Peterson?
I had one additional question for the sponsor, if he could come back for a second.
And thank you, Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I had mentioned last time whether in some situations you have a landlord that's actually living in a building that they own and they're renting out part of that building. And so I'm wondering, and they may actually own other buildings. And, you know, you're a landlord, if I believe.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if they would be able to use their voucher on their personal residence, or would they be able to use their voucher on a rental unit that they own, or is that up to them to make that choice? Or Just throwing out that question.
Representative. Through the chair, Representative Peterson, I would think that if their name is on the utility bill, that be it gas bill or fuel oil or electricity, they could apply that to that bill for that building. They're only going to get the one voucher. They can apply it to their house. If they have a building down here that's in their name that says Steve Thompson or whatever on it, they could possibly apply it to that. I'm sure that AHFC is going to have some regulations put in there where that they'll have to do the regulations to make this happen. But if you're only getting one, you're going to get one credit, be it at your rental unit that you have over here or be it at your home house. As long as it's your location, your home, I mean, you're in your name, I would think that it would be able to be used in that fashion. But again, AHFC is going to be writing the regulations on how this will be handled and administered.
And Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to get that on the record so they might already be thinking of what those regulations might be.
Thank you.
Real good. Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we discussed this kind of sort of a little bit at the last time we heard this with HFC, and that's when an idea came up on maybe using the last permit fund dividend application address that's there. And I know people are going to move, but then that's the starting point. That's where you base it on. And if there's any changes, I'm sure HFC will have some sort of regulations or forms for when you move from one location to the next.
Paul.
And Mr. Chairman, if the members will refer to page 3, line 3 of the bill, subsection 6, is valid for heating oil, natural gas, or electricity delivered to the voucher recipient's primary residence in the state.
Yeah.
We're good. Paul. Further questions? Okay, seeing none, as I mentioned, we'll get the language here with the amendments cleaned up and wrapped into a new committee substitute, and my intent would be to entertain a motion on Tuesday to ask that it be moved out of committee. So with that...
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Paul, go ahead.
An additional issue which has recently come up in addition to power cost equalization is also the language on page 4, line 7, dealing with the section Representative Tuck was speaking about. We cited the word landlord. However, it has come to the sponsor's attention that there could be a scenario such as a condominium where utility rates are paid by the homeowners association.
That's correct.
So they're not paid by the individual, yet we don't know whether or not a homeowners association could be considered a landlord, quote-unquote. So we are trying to craft language to deal with that eventuality. Perhaps Representative Tuck could be of use.
Oh, sure. Maybe someday.
Okay, with that, I believe the issues have been addressed here, and we'll try and get a CS out by Tuesday here. Let's see, the next regular committee meeting will be Tuesday, April 3, 2012 at 3 p.m. in the Barnes Committee Room, and we will be hearing bills previously heard. So with that, we will be adjourned, and the time now is 4:32. Thank you so much, everybody, for coming in.